The history of Athens circles for many years about the feud of two great families, the Alcmaeonidae and the Pisistratidae, the latter equally an aristocratic family but founding its power on the support of the poorer classes of the populace and the exploitation of their grievances. Later on, in the 6th and 5th centuries, a limitation of births and a shrinkage of families to two or three members, a process Aristotle notes without perceiving its cause, led to the disappearance of the old aristocratic clans, and the later wars were due rather to trade disputes and grievances caused and stirred up by individual adventurers than to family vendettas. It's easy to understand, in view of this intense separatism of the Greeks, how readily the Ionians of Asia and of the islands fell first under the domination of the kingdom of Lydia, and then under that of the Persians when Cyrus overthrew Croesus, the king of Lydia. They rebelled only to be reconquered. Then came the turn of European Greece. It's a matter of astonishment, the Greeks themselves were astonished, to find that Greece itself did not fall under the dominion of the Persians, these barbaric Aryan masters of the ancient civilizations of Western Asia. But before we tell of this struggle, we must give some attention to these Asiatics against whom they were pitted, and particularly to these Medes and Persians, who by 538 BC were already in possession of the ancient civilizations of Assyria, Babylonia, and about to subjugate Egypt. Fourth, we've had occasion to mention the kingdom of Lydia, and it may be well to give a short note here upon the Lydians before proceeding with our story. The original population of the larger part of Asia Minor may perhaps have been akin to the original population of Greece and Crete. If so, it was of Mediterranean race, or it may have been another branch of those still more generalized and fundamental darkish peoples from whom arose the Mediterranean race to the west and the Dravidians to the east. Remains of the same sort of art that distinguishes Knossos and Mycenae are to be found scattered over Asia Minor. But just as the Nordic Greeks poured southward into Greece to conquer and mix with the Aborigines, so did other and kindred Nordic tribes pour over the Bosphorus into Asia Minor. Over some areas, these Aryan peoples prevailed altogether and became the bulk of the inhabitants and retained their Aryan speech. Such were the Phrygians, a people whose language was almost as close to that of the Greeks as the Macedonian. But over other areas, the Aryans didn't so prevail. In Lydia, the original race and their language held their own. The Lydians were a non-Aryan people, speaking a non-Aryan speech, of which at the present time only a few words are known. Their capital city was Sardis. Their religion was also non-Aryan. They worshipped a great mother goddess. The Phrygians also, though retaining their Greek-like language, became infected with mysterious religion and much of the mystical religion and secret ceremonial that pervaded Athens at a later date was Phrygian, when not Thracian, in origin. At first, the Lydians held the western seacoast of Asia Minor, but they were driven back from it by the establishment of Ionian Greeks coming by the sea and founding cities. Later on, however, these Ionian Greek cities were brought into subjection by the Lydian kings. The history of this country isn't clearly known, and were it known, it would scarcely be of sufficient importance to be related in this historical outline. But in the 8th century BC, one monarch, named Gyges, becomes noteworthy. The country under his rule was subjected to another Aryan invasion. Certain nomadic tribes, called the Cimmerians, came pouring across Asia Minor, and they were driven back with difficulty by Gyges and his son and grandson. Sardis was twice taken and burnt by these barbarians, and it's on record that Gyges paid tribute to Sardanapalus, which serves to link him up with our general ideas of the history of Assyria, Israel, and Egypt. Later, Gyges rebelled against Assyria and sent troops to help Psammaticus I to liberate Egypt from its brief servitude to the Assyrians. It was Aliates, the grandson of Gyges, who made Lydia into a considerable power. He reigned for 7 years, and he reduced most of the Ionian cities of Asia Minor to subjection. The country became the centre of a great trade between Asia and Europe. It had always been productive and rich in gold, and now the Lydian monarch was reputed the richest in Asia. There was a great coming and going between the Black and Mediterranean seas, and between the East and West. We've already noted that Lydia was reputed to be the first country in the world to produce coined money, and to provide the convenience of inns for travellers and traders. The Lydian dynasty seems to have been a trading dynasty of the type of Minos in Crete, with a banking and financial development. So much we may note of Lydia, by way of preface to the next section. Fifth. Now, while one series of Aryan-speaking invaders had developed along the lines we've described in Greece, Magna Graecia, and around the shores of the Black Sea, another series of Aryan-speaking peoples, whose originally Nordic blood was perhaps already mixed with a Mongolian element, were settling and spreading to the north and east of the Assyrian and Babylonian empires. We've already spoken of the ark-like dispersion of the Nordic Aryan peoples to the north of the Black and Caspian seas. It was probably by this route that the Aryan-speaking races gradually came down into what's now the Persian country and spread, on the one hand, eastward to India, 2000 to 1000 BC perhaps, and on the other, increased and multiplied in the Persian uplands until they were strong enough to assail first Assyria in 650 BC and then Babylon in 538 BC. There's much that's not yet clear about the changes of climate that have been going on in Europe and Asia during the last 10,000 years. The ice of the last glacial age receded gradually and gave way to a long period of steppe or prairie-like conditions over the great plain of Europe, about 12,000 or 10,000 years ago, as it's reckoned now. This state of affairs was giving place to forest conditions. We've already noted how, as a consequence of these changes, the Solutrean horse hunters gave place to Magdalenian fishers and forest deer hunters, and these again to the Neolithic herdsmen and agriculturists. For some thousands of years, the European climate seems to have been warmer than it is today. A great sea spread from the coast of the Balkan Peninsula far into Central Asia, and extended northward into Central Russia, and the shrinkage of that sea and the consequent hardening of the climate of South Russia and Central Asia was going on contemporaneously with the development of the first civilizations in the river valleys. Many facts seem to point to a more genial climate in Europe and Western Asia, and still more strongly to a greater luxuriance of plant and vegetable life 4,000 to 3,000 years ago than we find today. There were forests then in South Russia, and in the country which is now Western Turkestan, where now steppes and deserts prevail. On the other hand, between 1,500 and 2,000 years ago, the Aral-Caspian region was probably drier, and those seas smaller than they are at the present time. We may note in this connection that Thutmose III, say the 15th century BC, in his expedition beyond the Euphrates, hunted a herd of 120 elephants in that region. Again, an Aegean dagger from Mycenae, dating about 2000 BC, shows a lion hunt in progress.